is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
One of the things that we know is that the rangers are the first responders and are really the heroes in protecting wildlife and elephants. And so we definitely wanted to support them and their communities through this really difficult time.
That's Sean Sugarman, president of the U.S.-based nonprofit Elephant Cooperation Organization, on a program to save African elephants while feeding and educating children and communities living with wildlife. Details coming up also. The UN, as well as the U.S., want elections to be held in Somalia as soon as possible. And authorities impose a nighttime curfew in Sudan's South Darfur state. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The Johnson & Johnson, or J&J, pharmaceutical company says it will provide a free batch of COVID-19 vaccines to launch South Africa's immunization program. The African country most affected by the pandemic was forced Sunday to temporarily suspend its rollout of AstraZeneca vaccine after it proved ineffective in preventing mild to moderate cases caused by the coronavirus variant prevalent in South Africa. Darren Taylor reports.
Scientists who tested the J&J jab say although it's less than 60% effective in preventing mild to moderate COVID-19 in people infected with the variant, it's 85% effective in stopping serious disease caused by the mutation. This means the J&J vaccine will prevent a lot of hospitalizations and deaths. South Africa's Health Minister Zweli Mkhize says his department secured 9 million J&J shots. He says the first tranche could be rolled out to healthcare workers next week.
The country has also secured the doses from Pfizer for phase one rollout, so they'll be brought forward earlier than originally planned. Also, our scientists are continuing to evaluate other candidates and we are simultaneously engaging manufacturers.
Pfizer's selling 20 million vaccines to South Africa. Dr. Mkhize says COVAX, the facility that's helping lower-income countries acquire jabs, has pledged 12 million. But it's not yet certain when any of these will arrive in the country. The South African government is also looking to Russia and China for their vaccines.
We're in advanced stages in evaluating and engaging the manufacturers of the Sputnik V candidate. We have correspondence and discussions in terms of what they are suggesting needs to be done. Engagements with Sinopharm also continue, with already an offer which has been made by China of some vaccines. And in this regard, a non-disclosure agreement has been signed and the ratification processes is in progress.
Mkhize says he'll accept the Russian and Chinese versions only if they're highly effective against the very infectious variant first detected in South Africa in December. The government, however, continues to be criticized for buying the AstraZeneca vaccine before its efficacy against the variant had been established. Mkhize responds that the state's processes of acquiring the jab preceded the discovery of the 501Y V2 variant.
South Africa could not delay the receipt of the vaccine batches to await the results of the efficacy studies by our scientists. If this was done, it would have relegated our country to the back of the line for vacancies due to the global shortage of supplies. But because we wanted to start early, we then took a small batch of about 1.5 million vaccines.
The minister's adamant that the millions of rands spent on the AstraZeneca vaccine will not be wasted.
We don't intend to go and claim the money back. We have been in touch now with WHO. I'm going to be even discussing with the COVAX and everyone. Yesterday I was discussing with the Secretary for Health in the UK, and everyone is trying to look at what is it that can be done, because in the rest of the world, this is a very highly well-used vaccine. There are already some countries who are asking that we must sell it to them. All we can say to other...
Mkhize says he understands that the disappointing results of the AstraZeneca shot are causing some citizens to doubt vaccines.
So there are many of us in the leadership, whether it's churches, the traditional leaders, whether it's government and political parties, who are ready to take the vaccine just to be able to make everyone understand that these vaccines are safe and will be the first ones to indicate that when that situation arises.
He says South Africa's, and indeed the entire continent's, struggles to get COVID-19 jabs should serve to spark Africa into developing its own capacity to manufacture vaccines of all types. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
A US-based nonprofit group is helping to save African elephants while feeding and educating children and communities living with wildlife. From Nairobi, VOA's Ruben Chama reports.
This month, Elephant Corporation delivered its first in a series of monthly food drops to the anger-stricken communities of Amboseli and Marsabit in Kenya, home to elephants and other wildlife species. As part of a new initiative called Elephants to the Rescue, officials from the California-based group say it plans to distribute $100,000 of food to over 2,500 people living in the two respective regions. Sean Sugarman is the president of Elephant Corporation.
One of the things that we know is that the rangers are the first responders and are really the heroes in protecting wildlife and elephants. And so we definitely wanted to support them and their communities through this really difficult time. We decided to go out to Amboseli and to Marsabit, which were two communities that have fair number of elephants living nearby. In Amboseli, there's about 1,600 elephants, and in Marsabit, about 8,000.
Elephants are threatened by extinction. Over the last several decades, the population of African elephants has steadily declined. Wildlife poaching has been exacerbated by COVID-19 and its impact on tourism income. But the unique non-profit is focused on finding effective ways to help elephants and the communities living near them, as Sugarman explains.
In Marsabit, there are many conservancies up there for wildlife. We have 150 rangers that will be supporting rangers and their families. And our hope is to be able to do this more, to have some success here, and then go back to our donor community and ask for more so that we can actually feed more folks in other places as well in Kenya.
Locals say their lives have been drastically disrupted by COVID-19 and that there is extreme food insecurity in the villages surrounded by wildlife. Sugarman says by feeding the children, families and rangers who fight wildlife poaching, his non-profit organization is making a difference.
You know, because of the shutdown, we haven't had any tourism. So women making beads and pottery and selling, these sources of income have dried up. So that and having the schools locked down, many of these families rely on the school to feed at least one meal, maybe even two, to the children. You know, that puts more pressure on them. So we found that Amboseli and Marsabit were lapsing into food insecurity.
He said working with a Kenyan youth group, the charity was able to deliver sacks full of grains, legumes and cornmeal to the wildlife communities. Founded in 2016, Elephant Corporation says the series of food drops will occur monthly throughout 2021 to help ranchers and their families who are instrumental to reducing wildlife poaching. The non-profit is also attempting to address the issue of human-wildlife conflict that is rampant across Africa. Sugarman gives more details.
An example recently is in Zambia. We're working with an organization called Kamako, and we just recognized three government officials in Zambia for their efforts to stop the decimation of the forest there. And so they're beginning to police the cutting down of trees more aggressively. And we're working with Kamako to create other means for cooking that don't require the damage to the forest.
In Meru, on Kenya's central highlands, where elephants have in recent years invaded farmlands and destroyed crops, Sugarman says his organization is partnering with conservation groups to fence off the park to stop the wild animals from raiding farms. The group is also active in Zimbabwe, where it is involved in modernizing schools and sinking boreholes for poor rural communities. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
Protests flared yesterday in several parts of Sudan over the high cost of living. According to the French news agency AFP, Sudan faces breathtaking inflation, chronic hard currency shortages, and a flourishing black market. The government, with a new cabinet that includes ex-rebel leaders, has been tasked with fixing an economy decimated by decades of U.S. sanctions, as well as mismanagement and civil war under ousted President Omar al-Bashir. Yesterday, demonstrators in Nayala, capital of South Darfur state, chanted no to high prices and no to hunger as they hurled stones at police and set several shops on fire in the main market. Authorities in South Darfur have imposed a 12-hour nighttime curfew. Sudan has been undergoing a rocky transition since the April 2019 ouster of Bashir. After talking on the phone with U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken yesterday, Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok tweeted that the U.S. was committed to supporting peace and democracy in Sudan and that bilateral economic relations are strong. The government of Tanzania says it does not need the country's citizens to receive COVID-19 vaccines. President John Magufuli has questioned whether the vaccine works. He said Tanzanians who returned from abroad after receiving the vaccine have brought the virus back to the country. Magufuli has played down the virus for nearly a year, and several months ago he said the country was free of COVID-19. However, scientists say that is unlikely given that the virus has infected more than 105 million people around the world. Charles Kombe is a journalist based in Dar es Salaam, and he tells my colleague, Kate Pondawson, many Tanzanians are beginning to doubt the government's position.
As you know, Tanzania stopped publishing or announcing cases of COVID-19 since April last year. And on June the same year, President John Magufuli declared the country free of COVID-19. But recently there have been contradictory statements from the authorities regarding the existence of COVID-19 in the country. You know, a few weeks, Tanzanian President John Magufuli claimed that Tanzanians vaccinated abroad had brought a coronavirus variant back. So declaring in an indirect way that there's a COVID-19 variant that were brought by those Tanzanians vaccinated abroad, but he still urged people to pray and inhale in steam so as to protect themselves from the virus. And of course, the head of the state also dismissed the COVID-19 vaccines that many countries in the world are now queuing to request the vaccines. So Tanzanians are still receiving some of the statements from the authorities that they should still use herbal cures to treat the infections, like inhaling steaming.
You mentioned that they had stopped issuing updated numbers on coronavirus cases. So what is known about the number of cases? Do people believe the numbers? Do they appear to be unreported cases?
Honestly, Kathleen, first of all, since the first wave of COVID-19 in Tanzania, the issue of providing appropriate information about the number of infections was still problematic, since April last year. So during this period, which is believed to be a second wave of the COVID-19 infections in the country, it is even worse. Authorities are partially accepting, other totally denying there's COVID-19 in the country. For instance, last week, Tanzanian Health Ministry announced it has no plans to accept the vaccines and maintaining there is no COVID-19 in the country. But when talking to people on the streets, you find that there are a number of people I can say, silently talking of their relatives dying of COVID-19 without their data published by the government. So out there, there are a lot of people who are dying of COVID-19 regarding social media posts from various people showing their relatives, their loved ones died of COVID-19. So this is something that is strange, and you cannot tell the extent of the infections in Tanzania.
Now, are people comfortable with the government's stance if, as you're reporting, there are unexplained deaths? How are people feeling? Do they trust what they're hearing from the government?
Honestly, many people are not comfortable with the way the government is handling the pandemic, and they are worried of the effects that this situation might bring to the future, because in the streets, you find that there are some of the people who are dying of COVID-19 when talking to their relatives and all that. So this leads to people not to believe what the government is saying, that there's no COVID-19 in the country.
That was reporter Charles Combi in Tanzania. He was speaking via WhatsApp with VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson. The UN Security Council and the United States want Somalia's federal government and regional states to hold elections as soon as possible. The Associated Press reported that Security Council members have called for Somalia's leaders to resume dialogue urgently and work together in the interests of their population. A Reuters report also indicates that the United States is deeply concerned about the absence of an election implementation agreement in Somalia and views immediate elections as critical to the country's future. Somalia's President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmaajo, who is seeking a second four-year term, is blaming unidentified foreign interventions for the delay, uncertainty over the election, according to press reports, is ripe for exploitation by the Somali-based Al-Shabaab extremist group, which has threatened to attack the polls. Internet and phone services have been restored in the Gambia after a major outage yesterday affected financial institutions and service providers. The country was cut off from the internet for hours. Reporter Pandera Mbai reports from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Access to internet and international calls weren't possible on Tuesday in the Gambia as Gamtel, the nation's main telecommunication company, suffered a major outage. The company says its main cable, called Africa Across Europe, had a major breakdown. Ibrahim Asila is Gambia's information minister. He spoke via Google Voice.
We had a major problem on our main ACE cable, which is the ACE, meaning the Africa Across to Europe cable. That is the main submarine cable that the country is connected to the outside world. Was cut by ocean-going vessels, and it also had a stunt fault. So basically, there were two issues with that. So we had to bring in the engineers from outside of the country to fix this cut.
The outage lasted for hours, leaving social media users and diaspora Gambians in complete blackout. Banks and other businesses could not operate because of the outage. Silla says the outage was compounded by problems with the cable on land.
So while that was going on, we were riding on our backup connection on this cross-country cable with Sonatel, and they connected us from the Jululung in Kazamas end towards the Kama, and that one also had a big problem. And as a result, when the country was out of internet and voice for international calls, so that basically was responsible for the outage today.
A similar outage hit the tiny West African nation last week. The four-hour blackout was greeted with public outrage. Silla says last week's outage was caused by a company laying underground pipes for the National Water and Electricity Company, NAWEC. The company at fault never reported the damaged cables to Gamtel.
I don't think it was sabotage. I think it was accidental, but it was an avoidable accidental thing because this was the third time they have been doing it. And the way the Gamtel cables are laid, I mean, these are laid deep, you know, I mean, under the ground. When you dig for, say, certain meters, you should see a warning light, which is green. Wherever you see that, you know, it will indicate that, you know, you should know that the cable is there.
Silla said efforts are being made for NAWEC to pay for the financial loss incurred during the outage. He apologized to the Gamtel customers for the outage.
We are extremely very, very sorry about what happened today and also last week. Really, I mean, this has actually caused a lot of financial burden on the financial institutions, on the general public, and also on service providers. You know that today in the Gambia, almost everybody depends on IT services, you know, in one way or the other.
The Gambia has lately been grappling with power cuts and internet outages. Customers have called for better and more reliable services. For VOA News, this is Pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Zimbabwe's battered economy is poised to suffer another blow with the announcement by neighboring Zambia that the Livingston Border Post will no longer be open to commercial cargo transporters. Arigando gives us more on the story.
In a recent public notice, the Zambia Revenue Authority announced that all Zambia customs agents and exporters will no longer be able to export goods through Victoria Falls using trucks as of the 1st of March. Goods will only be transported through rail. Observers say trucks will be priced away to the recently completed Kazungula Bridge, which is a joint venture by Zambia, Botswana, and Namibia. Zimbabwe did not participate in the project, and Zambia's recent announcement means regional road traffic will now be compelled to use Kazungula. Analyst Manuel Nkomo weighs in.
So while we appreciate Zambia's reasons for preserving that route as a tourism route, Zimbabwe, by not being part of the Kazungula bridge system, has rendered itself irrelevant in terms of the movement of goods and in terms of trade. What happens now is that whatever trade is there between countries, Zimbabwe will not benefit in terms of toll fees and in terms of business for freight companies. Mm-hmm.
The Zambia Revenue Authority, however, says the move is intended to minimize truck movement in Livingstone. Mambo Hamaundu, economic and financial analyst in Zambia, says it is an effort to maximize revenue collection in the country and improve border efficiency.
It's only fair and ideal that Livingstone is reserved for tourists so that people who are conducting business with the country, be it tourism or just passing through the country, are not necessarily laid, you know, as opposed to what was happening where you'd find that truckers are all lined up Livingstone and really piling up traffic from that place and causing delays in terms of movement. So it's really a question of efficiency, and the quicker things are done, the better. And that actually means that we'll probably have more traffic coming into the country and more traffic through the borders as in tourists and through the borders as in just cargo, other goods and services that are imported would actually translate into the extra money that country Zambia really needs. So we need to improve on operational efficiency.
Meanwhile, freighters in Zimbabwe say Zambia's new legislation is vague without clarity over its implications. Joseph Msari of the Shipping and Forwarding Agents Association of Zimbabwe, which represents all shipping, freight and forwarding, customs clearing and bondage warehouses in the country, weighs in.
We are still seeking clarification, but it's a fact that Chirundo will become busier. I think some of the traffic will use Chirundo coming from Zambia.
Freighters say such uncertainty is not good for business planning. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo in Zimbabwe.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Barrow, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Thank you.